Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I am Tyler Metcalf, joined as always by Tyler Rucker. Rucker, how's it going?
Metcalf, doing good. Another glorious day to talk some NBA draft. I'm pretty excited for this one. You know, I liked our last episode, Metcalf. I feel like this one's going to be even better. The deadline or the floodgates are getting closer and closer each passing week. I can sort of start to see the light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to the 24 cycle being back in our lives. It's really driving me crazy right now because I'm ready to rock. Maybe like 2 weeks I'll be fully ready, but I feel pretty good right now. How are you doing, sir? How's everything holding up?
Just fantastic. Getting that similar itch of needing basketball back. Also I'm starting to get that itch of doing a little more writing and video breakdowns. Yes. And stuff. The more I watch of these guys and the more research and stuff that we do for these podcasts, it's like, oh god, I need to start being better about putting content out besides this lovely podcast that we do. I'm excited for this one. So we're kind of building off of the similar theme of last week, hopefully consolidating and making it a little more streamlined this episode. But last week we focused on the kind of historical development of combo guards. We didn't go super far back, but we went back to 2016. And that was kind of right around the time where both of us started doing the really in-depth scouting work. And we went through just the 2019 draft because we both have this firm belief that you can't really make a full-on determination of a guy as a hit or miss until they have about 3 years of experience under their belt. Obviously, that you can have a good idea of if a guy is going to go one way or the other. But there are a lot of times where there is that big third-year breakout and fourth-year breakout where a guy's role and potential and projection can really change. So we like to be a little patient with these guys. So similar to last week, we are going to look at the center position. We're not necessarily breaking it down into a specific archetype of stretch big versus rim protectors versus rim runners versus switchable bigs. We're just looking at the centers overall drafted from 2016 to 2019, just in the first round. So, Rucker, when you think of the center, it's very open-ended question here that I'm doing you no favors of, but what really stands out with that position to you and just how it's kind of developed and grown and its influence over the last handful of years?
I think the biggest thing with bigs, with centers, right there, you could almost argue that it's transitioned from centers to just bigs now, because you almost have to either be a true center or be able to have a little bit of versatility where maybe you're playing the four or five. Like, it was awesome back in the day when we had those traditional, like, oh, you're a power forward, you're a center. And now the game's just like, okay, positionless for most teams. I think the biggest part for me is the scouting mentality has completely changed. You need to have a lot of versatility as a big now. Like, you're required to have a little bit of potential to be a floor spacer. It's not just back in the day, we would be looking at these guys and be like, okay, yeah, we'll feed them in the post, give them some looks there. And now it's kind of away from that. You're almost having a desire to kind of find the guys that it's like vanillaed when it's like, okay, they can protect the rim, they can rebound, play good defense, be a lob threat. It's almost simple. And if you have some other aspect of your game that you can also bring to the table, like Robert Williams is the name we'll probably bring up, but like, I loved Robert Williams out of Texas A&M because I was like, the Same. Defense is there, but he also has playmaking ability and some offensive upside. So I think now it's like, what NBA skills do you have? Do you have multiple ones? And what's your kind of, you know, the cherry on top when it comes to you, where it's like, oh, playmaking, there's some floor spacing potential. I think that's the biggest thing for me now with centers and bigs is you have to be kind of open-minded, where it's like, it's a completely different evaluation from early 2000s with like guys like Tim Duncan, where it's like, oh, we're going to run the offense through him in the post and let him go to work. And obviously Tim Duncan's a, you know, Hall of Fame, one of the best ever bigs, but you know, we've gotten away from like the Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett's, those feed up, let him have in the mid range. And obviously if you're, you know, a guy like Karl Anthony Towns or something like that, you still can do that. You still have those looks. And it's a really interesting thing with bigs these days, because teams have to be open-minded, where it's like you adapt to bring out the strengths of those players. But I think now we're seeing teams that are just like, we want the rebounding, rim protecting, athletic, lob threat, good hands, good feet. I mean, you always talk like feet and hands are so important. So sorry for my little rant there, but it really is an interesting case study when it comes to like the different opinion you have of big scouting throughout the years. What about you, Metcalf?
Yeah, and I think it's just really interesting how over the last couple of years, they kind of went from the absolute focal point where you had to have a 7-footer to even challenge for an NBA championship, to almost being viewed as being irrelevant, to now it seems like they're kind of the linchpin in how a lot of teams kind of build out their rosters, because there is so much versatility to the position now, where you can just have these low maintenance athletic rim runners, rim protectors, where that's their job. On offense, they don't really do anything besides screen and, you know, offensive rebound and catch alley-oops and putbacks and dunk it and then protect the rim on the other end. Then you have these other guys who are the offensive focal points, where they can stretch the floor, they can create for others, they can attack off the bounce, they can post up. So, you know, you get these wide ranges in guys, from a Mitchell Robinson to a Karl Anthony Towns to a Nikola Jokic to Ivica Zubac, you know, to Wendell Carter. And it's all over the spectrum now, where instead of being just this kind of cookie cutter position where it's like, you know, you just from one team to the other, they all kind of look the same. It's now become a total grab bag of what unique skill do you have, and what does this, I think a lot of where we can really determine what a lot of front offices and coaching staffs value based on who they implement at the center position.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest things you're seeing too now with all these new, this new crop of bigs coming in each and every year, is they're more versatile, or they're offering the potential to be more skilled when it comes to, you know, I think I've watched the McDonald's All-American game, like two of the top bigs, like first possession, they got the ball, they're putting up a three. And it's like, you don't see that right away. But now it's almost, we're NBA teams, organizations, scouts, we're almost wanting that from them now. It's like, show us that you have the potential to be a floor spacing big with some upside to more areas of your game. Like, we want to see that bigs have the ability to handle the ball a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying like, oh, you need to run the offense, but there is bigs that's like, hey, we can run the offense through them at the top of the key. They got playmaking ability. They got some vision. It's just, I really do think now the modern NBA, you need to bring more to the table as a big. It's really hard to be a big that's like, oh, well, I rebound at a high rate and I can block some shots. And it's like, unfortunately, that is going to be in the next draft. So you have to be able to offer something else to the table to keep your job, stay around in the league, or else they're going to just try to find that any other place. Like, we always say like, well, why would I draft that guy when I can maybe get that guy in free agency? Like, that's a big topic when it comes to bigs, you know? So I think that's, as a prospect, if you're a big man, you got to be having a lot of areas of your game that teams are thinking like, okay, this is maybe a little raw, but there's something here to develop in which we could have a more versatile piece.
Okay. After all of this, we're going to, you know, pivot to the bigs in the 2024 class and look at both the returners and a couple freshmen. But before we do that, we got to look at guys who kind of hit and unfortunately missed in the last couple drafts going back to 2016. And instead of running through pick by pick, year by year, we're just going to kind of group them into hits and misses. So I'm also going to, for those of you who are a little more visual learners, there's a lot of noise here. We'll run through it all if you're watching on YouTube. If not, we will do our very best to explain all of this. But when we look at the hits going back to 2016, there's Jakob Poeltl and Domantas Sabonis. Oh, and also these are, we're just looking at first round guys. So we're not going through second round and undrafted. In 2017, two guys who are going to end up being really major statistical outliers in Bam Adebayo and Jared Allen. 2018, DeAndre Ayton, Jaren Jackson Jr., Wendell Carter Jr., Robert Williams, and I guess Mo Wagner. We put him in yellow because he was a very end of the first round pick. Has hung around the league for, you know, a handful of years now, still gets minutes. So not really a hit, not really a miss. Looking at the misses in 2016, we have Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris, Georges Papayannis, Scala Bissier, Damian Jones. In 2017, Zach Collins, again, in yellow. Injuries have been a major reason why, and he was looking really good this last year. So don't feel super comfortable calling him a flat-out miss. But then we have Justin Patton, TJ Leaf, Harry Giles, Angus Pacenik. Apologies on the mispronunciation. Caleb Swanigan, rest in peace. Tony Bradley, 2018. Mo Bamba, Omari Spellman, and 2019. Jackson Hayes. I'm saying he's a miss based on where he was drafted. Goga Patazi and Mifondu Kabengele. Rucker, where do you want to start?
I mean, for everyone watching, and for everyone listening too, Metcalf's got an unbelievable chart up here with a lot of numbers, a lot of analytics, advanced numbers. So, you know, like Metcalf said, we'll try to kind of run through this and keep it as simple as we can because it might be intimidating for some. But when you slow down and go piece by piece, it starts to make a little sense. Beautiful mind status. It's just always so interesting to look back at just the wide range of bigs. You tell me, Metcalf, where you want to start? This is fun. I love numbers. I'm a nerd at times.
Let's just kind of go through big picture here. So the whole thing, or the whole premise of what we're looking at here, is eight different categories that seemed really relevant for centers and, you know, statistical trends that we could potentially look at. So we looked at eight categories, being block rate, steal rate, offensive rebounding rate, defensive rebounding rate, true shooting percentage, assist rate, three-point attempt rate, and then usage. And then averaged all those out between the 2016 and 2019 drafts, and then looked at how these guys compared to each other in those categories. And for those watching, if the cell is red, they're below average in that category. If it's green, they're above average. Pretty simple color coding. But there were some real commonalities that we saw when we did all of this. Of the guys who were part of the quote unquote hits, they were above average in 4.4 of these categories and below average in 3.6. And then the guys who were misses were above average in only 3.1 of the categories, as opposed to 4.9. Why these categories? I think the reason I chose these categories is because for block and steal rate, really good defensive indicators of how guys they're usually defensive indicators that translate pretty well to the next level. There's a pretty strong history of that. Offensive and defensive rebounding rates, I wanted to separate those out because for some players, one can really skew the total rebounding rate. And it's important to look at, okay, are these guys effective at crashing the glass, creating extra opportunities on offense? And then on defense, are they excellent at controlling the paint, controlling the rim, and ending possessions on that end of the floor? True shooting percentage was mainly just to look at, I don't really care right now if you're an awesome shooter or just a rim runner, can you be an efficient scorer? And that was the purpose of that. Assist rate, do these guys have any kind of general feel for the game? they don't have to be playmakers. They don't have to be offensive hubs, but are they moving the ball? Are they getting other guys involved? And assist rate tends to be a solid indicator of that. Then three-point attempt rate is how frequently of their total field goals, how many of those were three-point attempts. That was a better indicator of outside shooting than three-point percentage, because young centers are rarely very good three-point shooters in terms of percentage, but we wanted to look at willingness to shoot and how that kind of affects their game and carries out across the field. And then usage rate of how frequently were these guys involved, and then comparing that to where they were. What are they, just freshmen and they're involved all the time because they're that skilled and that important to the team, or are they, do they have a really high usage because they're older and they're just, they have seniority over everyone, so they're getting those kind of mandatory reps.
This is awesome. And for everyone that might have a headache, you know, Tylenol helps, but just bear with us. What I love about stuff like this, and this is the conversation that always will draw, you know, kind of an army or a bit of a battle when it comes to the discussion or the discourse when it comes to like analytics and the eye test. And I'm a big believer of like analytics like this is really good to tell you a bigger picture or to back up what you're seeing on tape. Like for everyone that's watching on YouTube. So like we're looking at Jaren Jackson, just to point out one. And in two categories, he's below average when it comes to offensive rebound and defensive rebound percentage. But every other category, above average. Or he's, you know, rating out in a high percentage. I think that tells you the story of his game. Like, you know, true shooting percentage is up there. The assist percentage, the block percentage is outstanding, which is like, yeah, defensive player of the year. He's really, really good rim protector. Steal percentage is up there. So it's like, well, what does Jaren Jackson do? Well, he's a smart shooter who can space the floor. He's unbelievable rim protector. So it's like you want to balance out what you're seeing on tape and what you believe in this player. Like, what are the strengths of his game? Where it's like some of the weaknesses that might show up in these numbers are like kind of obvious. Or it's like, you know, Robert Williams on this, outstanding numbers. His assist percentage is one of the highest amongst all the bigs we have listed here. And it's like, yeah, because they don't use him a ton in their offense, but he has the potential to be a very, very good playmaker for his position. Boston leans on him for his defensive ability. That's why they drafted him, because they're like, hey, this athletic rim protector with some playmaking flashes, they're never going to be a team that's like, hey, Robert, we want you to take three-pointers, because that's just not his game. Now, like, they probably drafted him hoping like, hey, maybe he could step out and hit that 18-footer at some point. But I think that's where the analytics numbers can get a little scary. But if you can decipher all of it, it tells the story of a player, of what you're seeing. And sometimes you might see a number and you're like, whoa, that shocks me. I don't know about you, Metcalf, but like seeing Bam Adebayo's numbers on here, I'm like, whoa, okay, that's a little shocking that, you know, a lot of those numbers are lower than you expect. But you also see like his usage numbers a lot lower than I would have thought for a talent like Bam. So it's always interesting I always use analytics and numbers like this to confirm what I'm seeing on tape. And if I'm ever like looking at two prospects and I'm really close, like maybe I have one 13th and one 14th on my board and I'm going back and forth, that's when I bring the numbers in and I'm like, help me with my eye test. Like, help me see if there's something I'm not seeing or if a player is more efficient. The last thing I'll say is I think the true shooting percentage is always tough with a big because a lot of their shots are around the rim.
Yep.
But the efficiency numbers are always going to be at the top of my list. Like the effective field goal percentage, true shooting percentage, I always think that's stuff I'll always want to look at first. What about you?
Yeah, and it's, again, it's really important to note that this is just kind of a guideline of, does it align with what you're seeing on tape? Or, you know, you mentioned Jaren Jackson, and it's like, oh God, he doesn't seem to rebound it well here. But then you have to go back and think about his role at Michigan State that year. And he was playing with Xavier Tillman a lot. He was playing at the four. He was not in the paint all the time. So even though he does have that high block rate of 14.3, a lot of that was weak side stuff where he's rotating down and collapsing on guys. But then in the general set of the defense in the half court, he was guarding fours and guarding on the perimeter a lot. So he wasn't always around the rim to do that rebounding. And then, you know, there are always outliers with this stuff, because just looking at this, you would think Bam Adebayo and Jared Allen would be bums. Bam Adebayo was above average in one of the eight categories. Jared Allen was above average in zero of the eight categories. And I just think that's really interesting, because it speaks to their roles, speaks to how they were used. And then it really speaks to their individual development and how much of an outlier some of these guys can be, and how much of this whole process can just be total blind luck in terms of drafting these guys.
And I want to clear up something. Like, looking at these numbers, obviously I'm referencing some of these guys with their roles now in the NBA. But as we said in the last episode, as Metcalf just said, like, roles change. But guys, our teams are looking at these numbers and projecting, like, okay, their strengths, where they rank out at a positive level, is that what we need for our team? And if you feel good about all those areas, then, you know, you're not going to worry about Robert Williams at 59% true shooting percentage, because you're like, we don't need him to be the offensive point on our team. We need him to be efficient in a limited amount of usage. And where he excels is what our team needs. It's just really also, I was the biggest Wendell Carter. Like, I loved his film so much at Duke. Yeah. I was just like, I'm all in on Wendell Carter. I loved him. And it's just funny looking at these numbers, just what a freak year he had. And I still think, like, those are guys we always go, like, man, did he really work out? And it's like, no, yeah, he's still playing. He's playing at a high level. And I think we always make these unrealistic, like, expectations. Like, even if you're a lottery pick, it's like, you're supposed to be a star. And it's like, hey, Wendell Carter might play more than 10 years in the NBA at a high level. So always tells you a story. And sometimes the fit is always what we say. Like, I'm not trying to, like, you know, dog Chicago Bulls, but like, if Wendell goes to a different team, is maybe that trajectory look a little different?
We saw how much of a leap he took once he went to Orlando. So yeah, just landing spot and environment and roster construction plays such a huge factor. So, you know, so maybe some of these hits, if they would have gotten drafted somewhere else, things would have gone a little differently. But just for reference for those listening, Wendell Carter is the only player on this list to be above average in all eight of the categories. And also, before I forget, we didn't include the international guys in this list. These are just the college guys, because those international numbers were not available.
Really convenient. Really convenient.
Perfect. Love it. But okay, let's run through some of these categories, just kind of big picture, what they mean. What's relevant, what's not, what's just noise. Let's start out with the block rate, which is a really, really good indicator of how rim protection can translate. And guys who typically have a really high block rate in college end up having an impressive block rate in the pros, and vice versa. But it's also it doesn't look like it's an absolute guarantee of who's going to be necessarily a good defender, because this is another number where it's really important to align it with the film. Whereas, is this guy an awesome rim protector because his rotations are spot on, he's deterring shots, he's, you know, his timing is perfect, or is he just chasing everything and is he just recklessly going after blocks? Out of the hits, only three of the eight guys that we considered a hit graded out as above average, and only five of the 14 misses graded out as above average. And then while we're talking about defense still, steal rate just doesn't seem all that important at all for centers. I think that one's much more of a perimeter defender stat. So,
I mean, it definitely gets interesting, because you get block percentage and we have guys like Jaren Jackson at 14.3. That's, you know, the biggest number. I feel like when you see this stuff and there's clear guys that are really high percentages, you're like, okay, I need to make note of that. But then, like, you know, Robert Williams at 10.5, Scalabissier at 10.3. So then you're like, okay, well, Scal was 10.3, but every other category he was below average. But then you get to, like, Zach Collins at 9.8. A lot of his other categories, he's above average. And I still think, you know, Zach Collins doesn't have an injury bug, we might be saying he's a really dang good player in this league. And still think when he's healthy, he's a very, very good, impactful piece. It's just always really interesting. Wendell Carter is up there in the greens. And then you get lower and you like Mo Bamba and Jackson Hayes were outstanding careers or outstanding rim protectors early on. And it's also fun because you can see what a player, it doesn't like the numbers won't tell you everything. Cause some guys, like we always say, are not finished products. Cause like Jared Allen's one of the lowest block percentages on this list. And he's one of the best rim protectors in the NBA. Yep. Now it just takes time for these guys to kind of find their groove. And, you know, Jakob Poeltl with the defensive numbers is low, but then you're like, no, he's known for his defense now in the NBA. So it's
numbers. That always, one shocked me.
That how, one did like when you started that off and that was the first number, I was like, whoa, okay. But I really do think it's an important thing too. Like you have to buy into potential and upside. And just because you're looking at analytics does not tell the whole story. It can help you, but I think that's why it's so big where I will always lean on the eye test. I will always lean on the film. And, you know, I joke sometimes where like film doesn't lie until I'm wrong on a prospect. And I'm like, okay, the film lied. But I think it's important to use the film as your, you know, your heart and soul when you're evaluating. And then the icing or the dessert is literally analytics to help you with that evaluation. And I've had plenty of times where I absolutely love the film and I go look at the analytics and I'm like, whoa, okay. I need to go rewatch the film. And sometimes that can change what you're seeing. Sometimes maybe you feel like, oh, you know, might be a little drunk in love. Shout out Beyonce. But sometimes you have to kind of not second guess yourself, but sometimes your own evaluation needs to be reevaluated, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Moving on to the next couple categories. What this whole exercise, one of the things it really showed me was how important rebounding is for these guys. I know that sounds like duh, they're centers that they need to rebound or else your team is screwed. But this whole exercise really backed it up where the guys who have hit 5 out of 8 of them were above average in both offensive and defensive rebounding rates. And then the guys who are misses, the vast majority were below average in both of those, where only 5 finished out at, or rated out as above average in both offensive and defensive rebounding. And Zach Collins was one of those. So even if you want to consider him a hit, now we're down to 4. The importance of creating extra possessions on offense, of ending possessions on defense, intuitively, it's obvious. Like, just the way basketball works, it's like no crap. But when you get these numbers and it backs that up and it backs up how these guys play, and it's a really, really easy number to kind of process and then also align with the film and the box score numbers. I think this is a really easy one going forward where you can use it to be like, okay, is this guy actually an effective rebounder, or is he just kind of out there taking up space?
Yeah, rebounding is so important. I like how you have the spread out with like the hits and stuff, because then you can go around and kind of average it out or compare when it comes to it. And from like what I'm seeing is, you know, you've got what, 8 guys as hits. Yep. Only one guy was below average across the board. That's Jared Allen. And I think that makes sense from, you know, his film and at college to what he's turned into. It's kind of just absolutely blossomed. And the other one is Bam Adebayo, who's below average in most stuff. And then the true shooting percentage. But those are also two guys that out of all of those hits were two of the lowest usage guys, not including Robert Williams. But what I think the biggest point is, when you look at these, it's a clear, like, if you're below average in one area, you need to be excellent in another to kind of balance it out. I think the rebounding is always going to tell a big picture, a big story. Like we pointed out earlier, Jaren Jackson's lower with his rebounding numbers, but he's excellent across the board in every other category. So it's like, well, the rebounding was not what we want it to be, but he's awesome everywhere else. And it's like, okay, I guess we can live with that, you know, especially if Jaren can play alongside maybe a bigger rebounder, or our roster features some guys that are really good on the board. So then Jaren won't you know, it balances out. And like Metcalf said earlier, it's always roster construction. It always is fit. So, but I rebounding would probably be at the top of my list if I was ever looking at a big. Like, oh, can he take over the game with the glass or what?
Yeah. The rest of these are more offensive based. So mm-hmm. we have true shooting percentage, assist rate, 3-point attempt rate, and usage. With the true shooting percentage, the reason I included that one specifically was really because I don't care necessarily where you're getting buckets from as a center, but when you get those opportunities and you are taking those shots, they have to be done efficiently. And then you can align it with that 3-point attempt rate. And if that is super low and your true shooting percentage is super low, we very well have a problem, because that means everything is inside. You're probably taking a lot of either you're post up heavy, you're taking a lot of bad mid-range jumpers, you're not finishing through contact, or you're just missing dunks and layups. So when both of those are low, that's a real concern. But if the true shooting percentage is a little lower, but the 3-point attempt rate is a lot higher, I can forgive that lack of inefficiency given how few young centers are actually legitimate 3-point shooters. Then looking at the assist rate, it's not, can this dude be a playmaker? Can he run an offense? But it's more so, it's more so used as a counter to the low block and steal rates, and just a tool to show, does this guy have a general feel for the game? And you look at Domantas Sabonis, for example, where he was one of the higher assist rates at 9.7, and that can tell you that he's a little more offensively focused, especially with the 66.2 true shooting percentage. And that can kind of offset the really low block and steal rate numbers that he had, because it's like, okay, this guy has a better offensive feel than most of these other guys. The defense could be a problem, and it very well may be a problem. Turns out it kind of has been, but the offense has really grown and become one of the most fun NBA skill sets in the league. And then with the 3-point attempt rate, I really hate throwing 3-point percentage on centers, especially since most of them are low volume, low difficulty level. But I want to see, are you willing to shoot from outside? And what that tells me is that there's a confidence there and a much higher potential for them to be a solid or at least capable 3-point shooter going forward. And then if it's super low, like a lot of these guys are, I don't really care.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really like all these categories you have, because I think the true shooting percentage always is important. I think assist percentage and also looking at assist percentage combined with usage is really fun for me. Yeah. Like if you don't have a high usage, but you have a high assist percentage, that tells me some fun stuff. That tells me like, okay, you know how to make impactful plays. And you see with the assist percentage and the usage, like a lot of those guys that graded out in both of those categories were a lot of hits, like a lot of good ones. Like it's usually works out where it's Wendell Carter, Jaren Jackson, DeAndre Ayton, Sabonis, Poeltl, and even Robert Williams. Like, yeah, the usage is at 21, but the assist is at 11, which is awesome. So it's just always really interesting to look at numbers. I know some people are probably having headaches. Like I said, just be patient. And I hope this helps for everyone listening. If you're wanting to understand what you're looking at, I hope you go check it out on YouTube, because this is a great way that Metcalf brought this up. And it's always funny when numbers can tell the story. Like I've said before, it doesn't tell you everything, but numbers will help you back up what you're seeing. And from everything I'm looking at right now, it definitely told me the same stuff when I was evaluating. And it's also funny, just some of the misses where it's like, yeah, it makes sense why all of these guys didn't turn out to be misses. And you look at a guy like Caleb Swanigan, like RIP, but high usage, yeah, high assist percentage, but a lot of the other numbers that were really important just didn't stand out. And it was like, hey, Caleb was drafted to be this potential playmaking, great feel big man. And you're like, if the rest of the stuff could turn around, because defensive rebounding, and it was a beast, 30.4. I mean, it was the highest number out of all, but it was like, can the rest of the stuff unlock? And that's usually what happens when you see some of these misses, is they had more questions that you needed to see if they could figure it out at the next level.
Yeah, and with Caleb, that's always a tough one because there's obviously other stuff going on that I know you're well aware of. And, you know, a guy like Harry Giles is on this list, but just after that, those injuries in high school, he just never really turned out to be the guy that we all hoped he was. Kind of Justin Patton coming out of Creighton, some of his offensive numbers were incredibly impressive, but then he gets that foot injury and just stuff never really develops. But I'll make sure to that when we share this on Twitter and whatnot, that we include some sort of screen grab or whatever of this whole spreadsheet. Yeah. So you can kind of follow along. But the reason, besides just kind of having fun and looking at what made sense over these last handful of drafts, that we did this is to bring it forward to the 2024 draft and kind of looking at some of the returners and looking at their numbers from last year or their careers, if they're more than just if they're older than just sophomores. Obviously there is an inherent flaw to this because it completely discounts the progression that they've taken over the summer and all of that stuff. But I think it can still be an interesting starting place to look at these guys going into next season. For me, the one that really stands out is just Donovan Klingon right off the bat. Where he's above average in 6 out of the 8 categories, and the only ones that he's below average in are assist rate and 3-point attempt rate.
And I think both of those categories we're expecting, you know, they've been playing overseas. There was rumors that the 3-point shot was going to be something added to his bag this year. He's been attempting them in all those exhibitions overseas. So that's probably going to go up. And I think with playing time, the assist percentage is going to go up. So I think this is almost more important for now to almost track where this ends up going, because you can argue that Donovan with more playing time could do some real damage with all these numbers in a good, hopefully not a negative way, but that's definitely one that catches your eye right away. And as you're expecting, like he was an analytics darling last year, but now you're expecting like a big year for him. And the fun part about this list is there's some names already that I was lower on last year that I'm like, whoa, those are higher numbers than I was expecting. So it's fun to almost see like, okay, this is where they're starting at. Let's see what they can do to build off of this.
So which name that you were kind of skeptical on, were you like, oh, interesting.
I would say Filipowski jumped at me right away. Assist percentage is nice. Obviously, there's 3-point attempt rates there, but we'd like to see it be more a little efficient this year, and I'm expecting that all to happen. But even like the steal percentage being up that high, I'm like, whoa, okay. And the defensive rebound number is good. All numbers, I think, will get better. Like his true shooting percentage is a little bit below average, but I think it's just because last year the 3-ball really struggled to come around, and if it takes the leap that I'm expecting, I'm sure he's going to be a name with a lot of greens. What about you, Metcalf? When you put these together, were there any names that you kind of were like impressed by or shocked by or confirmed what you saw on film? Or
I think the Filipowski examples are a really interesting one because the steal rate being 2.7 shocked me.
Yeah, that's a felt big number.
Really high, and that's substantially higher than anyone else on the sheet, even going back to the previous drafts. I thought the rebounding stuff was really interesting. I know he put up a ton of double doubles all season, so it's not like, oh, whoa, he's an awesome rebounder. Well, yeah, it showed up in the box score, but I think it's also really indicative and really shows that he was playing on the perimeter a lot with such a low offensive rebounding rate, but almost a 25% defensive rebounding rate, where on defense he's crashing the glass, but on offense he was always out on the perimeter. Then you look at the 3-point attempt rate being high, true shooting percentage being low. It's like, okay, so he didn't shoot well from three at all. Is he a bad shooter? Was he taking difficult shots? Did he have awful shot selection? But then you go back and look at the tape and it's like, okay, the form kind of looks pretty good, which is encouraging. The confidence is definitely there, but then you look at the shot attempts and the difficulty of it, where there are a lot of step backs and movement stuff, and it's not just the trails, you know, the trail threes, or he's standing in a corner and launching whenever it gets swung to him. There's a lot of difficult shots in there, so it's like, okay, I can be a little more forgiving on that really low true shooting percentage because you are taking a lot more difficult shot attempts. And that was something I really ragged on him for a lot of last draft cycle. And it's like, okay, this is kind of making some sense.
I mean, he would have a, with comparing to all the hits we just talked about previously, he'd be third in defensive rebound rate, and he has an assist percentage that Robert Williams had. So those are big numbers. Very, very big numbers. Like even Oso at 15.6 for an assist percentage is like, whoa, like that is a humongous number. I mean, Caleb Swanigan, everyone knows how awesome his playmaking ability was in college, and he was at 16.4. So that's a serious neighborhood to be in. And it's important to look at these numbers because it really does tell you, like, you know, also with that at 15.7 usage is even more absurd.
Yeah.
But it's a good stepping stone, good kind of area to take and see where they could build off of. I don't know. I mean, bonus numbers even too. Like it makes a lot of sense to me with all of that stuff.
Specifically with Bona, I mean, super high in offensive rebounding percentage, which makes sense given the way he plays. But then the defensive rebounding rate feels unnaturally low for a guy of his athleticism and work rate. But then again, that's where you have to go back to the film, and kind of similar to the Jaren Jackson low rebounding numbers. It's okay. Is Bona a bad rebounder? I was like, no, not really. But then when you go and watch their pick and roll coverage, he was blitzing everything where he's chasing guys out to half court and then having to chase and recover. So it's not that he's a bad rebounder. It's that their defensive scheme had him way out of the paint and away from the rim all the time. Now that they're bringing in a Daimara and, you know, a handful of other guys, I kind of expect that to be similar this year, where his defensive rebounding numbers are probably going to be similarly disappointing. But does that align with the tape? Does that match with what he's doing on the court? Or is that a scheme thing where he's not put in a position to really bolster these numbers?
And we always say situation is everything. And I think even you saying that out loud about Bona, that if I was in a front office, I would be like, oh, you mean we can put him on an eye. He can switch and hold his own out there, and he's going to be comfortable doing it. And then if he doesn't have to, he's going to be way better when it comes to rebounding and stuff. Like that would make me even more intrigued that Bona's already working on the part of his game where it's like, okay, we could switch with him and survive. Obviously now, if you know, Bona's going up against Kyrie Irving, I have a feeling Kyrie might win that battle, but I'm just saying, like, you would like to see that you feel good about that. And you feel also like, the numbers don't tell the whole story, like we're saying before, because of the situation. And like Metcalf said, like the scheme that he's in.
I think the other one that we really got to talk about is a guy that we were both very out on last year. Khalil Ware's numbers were significantly better than I thought they were going to be.
I didn't expect to see that much green.
Yeah. So,
and for everyone listening, like I'm very excited. Because if Mike Woodson can't get Khalil Ware to rock, then I don't know who can. And I think him going to Indiana, like when there was the rumors of he was visiting and stuff, I was like, go to Indiana. Like Mike Woodson will unlock that. So I'm excited for him this year. I'm rooting for him. It was just the whole time when he was going to Oregon, I was like, this is not going to work. And it's not just Khalil Ware, and it's not just like I'm scared of four prospects going to Oregon this year. So that's good. That's a good area to start, Metcalf. Like those should build in those strengths. The offensive rebound, I need a little bit more juice. But
again, that makes sense given the lineups that he was playing with, where he was out there sharing the floor with Dante and Biddle a lot. And he's typically that power forward who is used for floor spacing. So kind of similar to Filipowski, he wasn't always around the rim. I'm a little hesitant that that's really going to take a leap up. I'm assuming he's going to be playing with Malik Reynaud a lot, but I would love for them to play him at center a bunch and like actually have him around the paint and use that length and leaping ability to generate those extra possessions, because I think that's the one big area where we're looking at. Obviously, the shooting could be a little more efficient and all of that stuff, but by putting him around the paint a little more, letting him be a little more consistent rim runner, I think we're going to see that offensive rebounding rate rise. I think we're going to see that true shooting percentage rise. And then you combine that with him being above average in both of the defensive playmaking categories. that's really encouraging. I did not expect him to be above average in five out of these eight categories, given how disappointing his year last year was.
I mean, Bona's block percentage was awesome, and Khalil Ware had a nightmare year and almost had as good of a block percentage. So that's where I love the numbers to come back and tell me, like, hey, maybe it wasn't as bad as I saw. Maybe, like, this is a good year. Obviously, Ware is... he has all of the stuff lining up to just have an unbelievable bounce back season. And I have to point out that the fact that him and Hunter Dickinson almost had the same defensive rebounding percentage is probably not good news for Hunter. Shout out Jayhawks fans.
Yeah. Have fun.
This is important. Like, this gets me more excited about Khalil Ware this year. And I'm right there with you. I think Malik Renew is going to be one of those guys that everyone's going to remember very quickly. Sounds like he's in fantastic shape and he's been working his butt off. So it's going to be interesting. Do they kind of play those two together? Do they kind of do some high low? Do they try to, you know, we'll see, but I'm hoping that Woodson at least gives Ware a chance to kind of spread his wings. And, you know, if he just could show me some more offensive versatility.
Yeah.
I just need the motor to be on.
Yeah.
I don't need it to be on 100%. I would love that, but I don't need it early on. If he could just show me like he has some possessions where it's just cooking, I'll be like, I'm in, big buddy. Like, let's do it. I don't know. What about you? Anything else, or Khalil Ware at number five on your board? No, do you want to spill that now?
I do not. I have him fringe first round. I'm in wait and see mode. Yes. I'm in please excite me early on mode. Because the tools are there. The tools are there for him to have a monster year. He's just got to want it. And that if he does, I expect both of those rebounding rates to rise. I expect the block rate to rise. I expect the true shooting percentage to rise. Situation was bad for him last year. Hopefully this one's better. Anything else on this, or do you want to move into a couple of the freshmen?
No, I got nothing else. Cool. You know, sorry for the diehard Creighton fans out there about Kalkbrenner being on there, but all those names make a lot of sense. Zach Edey's still going to be fun this year. He's still a freak.
Just so incredibly productive at everything.
His offensive rebound rate and defensive rebound rate being above 20 is just hilarious. It's
incredible.
With a 32.6 usage.
But then also a 13 assist rate.
Yeah, so freak.
Just fun.
Someone's going to take him early. I know. I'm not saying like top 10, but someone's going to take him in like the first and just shock us.
I think he's, just to wrap up with all that, I think he's a really good case of one of these guys who, is he going to be a star? Probably not. But I think he's shown that he is so productive in so many different areas of the game where he's probably going to have a solid 10-year career as a backup or a guy getting 15 minutes a night, where it would shock me if he just at minimum doesn't hang around the league for a while.
A playoff team is taking him 100% because they're saying if it's going to work, it's going to work with us.
Yeah.
And that's going to be our backup big that we bring off the bench. And, you know, he plays 5 minutes real quick and gets all of a sudden three boards and, you know, a couple buckets. Like, you know, some team will do that and they'll say, if it's going to work, it's going to work on our roster. So where do you want to go with the freshman?
Okay. So I only put down four names for the freshman. I think they're kind of the four biggest names to keep an eye on at the center position. I can't wait until I accidentally forget someone and someone roasts me for it.
I'll call you out. Don't worry about it.
I think the ones most worthy of talking about are Xavier Booker, Aaron Bradshaw, Izan Almansa, and Alexander Sarr. I'll let you pick. Where do you want to start with those?
Yeah, I mean, we can touch on a dive Mara too if we need to. We'll do it
God,
quick.
We're
going to try to do some focused episodes on the big names, but we'll do big picture stuff here. Bradshaw, I'm not there yet. The injury, the preseason broken foot, broken foot. Yeah.
Yes, I believe. I know it's a foot injury.
Yes. Is a buzzkill. Hopefully he's okay.
The timeline on that?
Don't know the timeline. I know there was rumors he was shedding the boot soon. We'll see. But I had a lot of questions about Bradshaw before that happened. So we'll see what happens. I don't know if you got any comments. Like, the very lengthy, impressive frame. I just think still super raw. Needs to put some weight on. But that's the rim-protecting potential beast for Kentucky. I just hope he plays this year. Like, I don't know why. I just hope he plays. I hope that late recruitment to get the Croatian big guy isn't Zvon Mir or whatever. Sorry if I said his name wrong. I don't have it in front of me. Isn't a sign that Bradshaw's, you know, not supposed to play that much. But I'm excited to see what he can do. Xavier Booker, I think me and you have kind of sprinkled the talk in. I'm excited where he's going. I think that coach will be very good for him. He's kind of a sleeper in my eyes. What about you? Where do you want to go? I know there's some big names that I'm dancing around, but
yeah, I think the Bradshaw analysis is a little tough right now, just because who knows when he's coming back, and when 7-footers who move like he does and rely on that kind of fluidity and athleticism have a broken foot, that's tough. That's really tough to come back from quickly. You don't want to rush that stuff. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to his game. I think there are some fun passing flashes. The shot looks promising. He looks confident in it. So long term, I think that could be a real tool. The defense, it didn't, I don't know what to feel about the defense, because he wasn't a bad defender, but he never felt as impactful as he should have. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
100% makes sense.
So it's going to be fascinating to see how his year goes. I really hope that he doesn't rush the rush his path back, because broken feet, messy business. Let's dive into Xavier Booker's game, though, because I think he's a really, really fascinating prospect. Someone who I have a lot of mixed feelings on. Most of them are excitement.
Can you sell me on him? I need to watch some more. I'm going to be honest. I've watched, there's a couple of guys that have slipped through the cracks that I need to watch more of. I feel like me and you have talked a little bit about those. Xavier's literally on my list for after this episode. So, I'll take the fine on that one, but, hit me with the Xavier stuff and then I can help you. Help you. What are your thoughts? What are your excitement levels, and where were you nervous about?
Could be just like a freakishly versatile offensive player. The shot looks really beautiful, really good positional ball skills in terms of his handle. A lot of really exciting passing stuff where he's kicking out of drives, making wraparounds, skip passes. The accuracy is kind of hit or miss on that, but just the vision, the mentality, the creativity to try stuff. In the high school level, I thought was really, really encouraging going forward for what he could be. Good athlete, fluid, good leaper, good rebounder.
Good size chop too, right? 6'10", yeah. 6'11"?
I think he's 6'10". Yeah, I got 6'10", 2'10".
That'll check.
So all the physical tools are awesome. The defense is really good shot blocker, really good rebounder.
Legendary butt coming on.
The motor is not ideal.
We always love the not ideal motors around here.
Yeah. So a lot of the defensive stuff felt, I am bigger and more athletic than everyone, and I'll deal with it when it gets to me type stuff, where he wasn't anticipating rotations. He wasn't, you know, beating guys to the spot. He wasn't getting down in a stance. It was
okay. Okay.
So I'm hesitating on being like, oh, this is a major red flag, because he was significantly bigger in the games that I saw. He was significantly bigger and more athletic than everyone else on the court. So I'm really hoping it's a competition thing where it's like, what are we doing here? And he didn't really have to worry about getting down in a stance and being perfect on his rotations and all of that, because the tools in terms of shot blocking and all that kind of stuff are there. It's just, how frequently is he going to implement them? With Izzo, I would imagine that if he doesn't, he's not playing. So he's going to have to figure that out real quick.
I mean, everything you just said to me sounds like the classic, like, oh, you bring a truck into the shop and they're like, hey, you need a new engine. Everything else is great, but you need a new engine. And then you put a new engine in and it's like ready to roll. So, I mean, centers are always scary to me at the high school level, because I think the sentence you just said of like, I'll get to it when I want, is very popular with the athletic guys. And I feel like the first month of college basketball, you could be like, that quickly got thrown out the door. Like, the motor's kicking. So, you know, maybe Tom Izzo's giving him a new motor. Maybe we'll see what happens. But, okay, now I'm going to get off and watch Xavier Booker tonight. There's my late night activity.
Yeah, because I think there's a lot there to like. And so frequently when we talk about those guys where it's like, oh, God, they're just such a better athlete than everyone else. It's their production and dominance comes just purely through that athleticism and that size, where there's like, where it becomes really easy to tell this isn't translating because there's not a whole lot of skill there. A lot of Booker's dominance and production comes through his skill and his versatility and his, especially on offense, where he's just kind of effortlessly floating around and finding these open pockets and drifting into space and cutting along the baseline. He has an intuitive nature of finding where to be and then moving the ball quickly and making really quick decisions on that end of the floor. So everything he does on offense is encouraging in terms of what he could be on defense. I just need to see it.
Okay. I like that though a lot. It sounds very, very exciting.
It wouldn't surprise me if he's one of the biggest risers and we see like a Jaren Jackson-esque like meteoric rise from him.
I'm telling everyone right now, I said this before we started this show to Metcalf. I said, I'm getting excited about this class. I know everyone's been bad-mouthing it. There's some names that I'm really getting excited about watching some of this film now. So, hey.
Yeah,
I'll be that guy.
Yeah,
you guys can all say it sucks. I'll say I'm ready to rock with this class. Like, I'll go to war with any class. I'm pumped. So I'm tired of hearing about it.
The thing with that is people got to stop comparing it to the last five drafts or so.
Yeah.
Those are outliers. We have gotten incredibly spoiled.
The 24 class is the 24 class. Don't compare. Yeah, it's going to be fun. We're going to be fine. But stop comparing it to the other classes because we have been spoiled. And I'm telling you right now, every damn person that's saying this class is weak, fact check them in 6 months and they're all going to be like, oh, class is getting really exciting, intriguing. So we'll see. Who else you got?
I'm the only other couple names are some guys that I talked about a bunch after FIBA with Almansa and Sar. Do you have any new thoughts on them?
I've watched a bunch more of all of them. Almansa's going to be a popular name, going to have a lot of people in their feelings, probably having them in the top of their boards or in that region. I get it. He has an unbelievable track record. If you're talking about overseas play, he's been with the OTE the last couple of years. I have more questions. I think there's a lot of stuff that really could come together fast and shine.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, I think this G League Ignite team could have some guys that shock people in not a great way. I think it could be a rude awakening for some guys that people are very high on going into the year. And I think there's some guys on that roster that could be more impressive than people are realizing. And Almansa, I'm not trying to badmouth him. I just think he's got some tools. He's got some touch. He's got some stuff off the bounce that really gets you in your feelings.
Could he have physicality. A weird Miller-esque year?
I think he could. And obviously they're going to have a lot of mouths to feed with that roster. Not even talking about the backcourt. I love some of their backcourt prospects. Derry Darlin's one of my guys. I just love watching him raw, but I do really like his game. But I just think Almansa could have some of those games where we're like, whoa, look at that night. But he's going to have to put on some weight. And if not, he's going to have to really build that versatility with that outside shot and being a multi-level scorer. Because if you're going to get bullied inside, which there's going to be some bullies going up against him, because everyone, you know, every vet trying to get into the NBA is going to understand who these kids are. So I'm intrigued. I think he's shown a lot of flashes. Wait and see mode a little bit. I mean, I've got him in my top 10, which most people will, but I'm in wait and see mode.
Yeah. And then just with Sar, the tools are incredible. The tools are fascinating and so much fun. I just need them to kind of come together and be a little more productive and a little more consistent.
Really fun tools. Yeah. But he plays sometimes
more than that.
Yeah. Sometimes he plays where he took 10 espresso shots before the game. And I'm like, slow down, which is fine. I think a coach would always rather say, hey, let's get you slow down a little bit. But the game needs to slow down. It's one thing slowing down and the game slowing down. I think sometimes it's just sped up to him. And it's a great problem to have. Like if we were saying Xavier Booker has all the tools, he just needs to slow down, we'd be fine. But we're saying he needs to have a better motor. With Sar, I think it's just sometimes he's just out of control. And if the game can slow down and things start to come together, like Metcalf said, I'd be really pumped. But I still think he could be one of those gets drafted later and some team is like, let's give this a couple years and be patient. And then maybe it doesn't click this year, but maybe everything really starts to come together in a couple years. And we're like, oh man, Sar turned out to be a really nice piece. Do you agree or you just...
Yeah, no, I just think he... My big hesitation with him is that it feels like we've been saying that for a couple of years now, where it's like, these tools are awesome. These tools are awesome. He's got to figure out what to do with them. When it clicks with him for, you know, the stretches that it does, he looks awesome. He looks really versatile, really impactful, really fun.
He's like a Sam Presti pick for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm really hoping that things start to click a little more consistently with him this year, because there's a lot to like and there's a lot to build on. It's just whether or not it does click. Rucker, you got anything else?
I love Adai Mara. I'm worried. I've loved him. I've loved him since people could go back and listen to when we did the FIBA breakdowns last year. I was like, man, I like Mara a lot.
Very fun.
Really excited for his game. Need him to get tough.
Yeah.
Need him to get tough. Like he has such awesome plot passes and his feel is sensational. He's got rim protection. He's got a lot of stuff that checks the boxes. There's some times where he gets pushed very easily and I'm like, my man, that is not going to last at the next level. So I have a good feeling he's going to have a good competition in practice with Adembona is probably going to show him what it's like. So I feel like everybody else might feel very soft compared to Bona, but I feel like a lot of people are going to be in love with him quick. And if he comes out and looks great early on and you know, those tune-up games to start the year, like, I'm going to be pumped, but I'm big Mara fan. I'm excited to see what he can do. This class is going to be fun. Get excited, folks. I'm tired of hearing the negativity. ELE, everybody love everybody. So no, Metcalf, that's all I got. I think the bigs are getting a lot of buzz in this class. They should. There's a lot of excitement. There's, you know, Filipowski takes another step. Bona takes another step. And Khalil Ware has a breakout year. This class can get real fun in a hurry. People are going to have to remember that they were bad-mouthing this stuff. If they don't, then yeah, I understand the hesitation. But I still think we talked before we hit record. Like I was like, there's some names I'm getting really excited about towards the top. So that's all I got.
All right. Well, once again, I'm Tyler Metcalf. You can follow me on Twitter at TMetcalf11. He is Tyler Rucker. You can follow him on Twitter at Tyler_Rucker. You can find all of our written work at NoCeilingsNBA.com. It's 100% free. Just click that subscribe button. You can follow us across all socials at NoCeilingsNBA and on YouTube at NoCeilingsTV. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and a 5-star rating. Till next time, see ya.
Looking for a simpler way to explore medical weight loss options? Orderly Meds connects you online with licensed healthcare providers so you can learn about GLP-1 treatment options from home. It's convenient, straightforward, and designed to fit your lifestyle. Get started today at orderlymeds.com/podcasts. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.